Hello, everyone. Welcome to All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. I am Brother Francisco, and that is Nate, my goofy younger brother. And my over there is Tom, my cool, wise, collected older brother.
You know what? Screw you. That's a terrible way to start an episode. You can't just do me like that.
I can do you however you want.
He's completely right, though.
So, good to be with you guys. For all of you who were wondering what happened last week, where's the episode? We wanted to leave you in suspense, so we kept it off for a week in celebration of episode 100.
That's a funny way of saying there might have been some technical difficulties or something. Yeah.
/ I actually had pneumonia, so we couldn't.
Yeah.
But in great preparation, we are here to celebrate already episode 100 of All Good in the Brotherhood, which is crazy to me. If you told me, like, when we started that, like, we'd have pushed out 100 episodes, I wouldn't have
believed you,
probably. So certainly not in this time frame. So, but to celebrate episode 100, we have a cool announcement. So, you don't want to hear me, so I'm actually going to give the announcement to Tom and say, what is cool that we want to share with everyone now that we're on episode 100?
Cool. In this case, the announcement is cool too. But so if you tuned in to our live stream recently, you probably heard this already, at least some elements of it. But we're gonna hit it on here just so you folks have a chance to, you know, get to know a little bit better what we're talking about. If you heard our last live stream, and if you didn't, then this is the first time we're announcing what we're calling the Benedict Project. So the Benedict Project is going to be a concerted effort to develop a community, if you will, that's more than just like this podcast. So it's not just All Good in the Brotherhood podcast, which obviously came out of an idea of the three of us here wanting to collaborate and kind of like share our stories and talk about Brother Francisco's, you know, life as a monk and his growing into that vocation, you know, in my own ways as a father and a husband, and Nate as a now graduated college kid entering the world in the workforce. All Good in the Brotherhood is still going to be a key voice in this new community idea, but we're trying to build something that's more like a movement, something that you folks can be involved in as well, not just in the sense of here's some nifty content to like digest and consume and maybe share, if you will, but actually some ideas, some philosophies that we think are going to be important to kind of retaking some of the cultural ground in our country and in the world. We know the United States isn't the only country listening to this podcast.
That's true.
But Benedictine monasticism has had a significant effect on certainly Western civilization, going back to the roots of science and literature and history and cultural growth, economic growth of many countries. So, but it's more than that too. Again, it's about trying to regain some of what's been lost because of the rise of secularism and the rise of atheism, relativism. And so there's going to be many different aspects of this thing that we're calling the Benedict Project. And again, the podcast will be a continued element of that. But there's going to be other aspects, some of which you guys have already been tracking. You've already heard us talk a little bit about. Nate, in your own words, what are we doing?
Let's hear it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. For one thing, just the idea that we're trying to expand beyond a show about us brothers to something that's more of a movement, something they can more participate in, what we often call the new evangelization, right? So we know as a church, we're always trying to evangelize. We're always trying to find as many different avenues through which to connect with the culture so that we can evangelize the culture, bring as many people to Christ as possible. And so although I think if we started out this little podcast as just something that we could do as brothers to kind of spend time with each other more, as almost an excuse to have good conversations and maybe have a few listeners, I think now it's progressing where we hope that it'll have more of an impact on that new evangelization and being able to minister to people, particularly by being able to bring them the message or the cultural impact of Saint Benedict, right, in the modern times. And like you pointed out, Saint Benedict and Benedictine monasticism in general had a huge impact on Europe back in, you know, the early medieval times. And when you think about the historical context of that, what had just happened? Well, the Roman Empire had just collapsed, which at that time, in those later decadent years, it was basically a Christian empire. It wasn't, not the people were being very virtuous. A lot of those Christians were deep hypocrites, and there was a lot of corruption even among the clergy. But what you did have is that basically this Christian empire collapsed. And in its wake, mm-hmm. there was a lot of division, there was a lot of conflict, there was a lot of uncertainty. And yet out of that sprang Benedictine monasticism, and that gave some hope, and that gave these touch points of culture and wisdom and Catholicism to a world that was kind of had the rug swept out from under them. And I think in a similar way where we are nowadays is that in a lot of ways the West has collapsed. A lot of the central ideas and philosophies that we've had for hundreds of years have kind of had the rug swept out from under them by relativism and by globalism and by a lot of kind of current issues. And even just like in our own lives, we've had a lot of ways in which we felt culture break down or even society break down. Even just, you know, a few years ago, 2020, right? We had the pandemic that broke down for a lot of people some of that sense of unity that they felt normally with their fellow men. It tended to push a lot of people towards isolation and towards a lot of struggles that we see now going on in our culture. And so it's important to go back, just like we did in medieval times, it's important to go back nowadays to Saint Benedict and, you know, the wisdom that he shared through mm-hmm. the monasteries, both for an inspiration in terms of our faith, Catholicism, but also in terms of culture, whether it be art, literature, writing, whatever. And so I think this podcast is kind of how I'm seeing is we're hoping to expand beyond just us talking to each other to us participating in the new evangelization and presenting kind of a unique edge that we have through our brother, the monk, of being, well, here's maybe St. Benedict's way of participating in the new evangelization. Here's the way we can present Benedictine spirituality as opposed to Dominican or Franciscan or any other form, so that, you know, a world that's much in need of some strength and some spiritual renewal can have some, particularly with a Benedictine spin on it.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're aiming for. And like Nate said, monasteries were center points for more than just religion and spirituality, but for culture, science, and just the entire development of civilization. So that really, if you look at a map of Europe and like all the major cities, and then you overlap that with a map of major monasteries throughout Europe, they coincide like perfectly, showing how it was like out of the monasteries grew the entire life of the country and of the world of the West. So that nowadays, though, people aren't flocking to monasteries necessarily to find that. Now, I think in some ways they are. People, you know, come to retreats. People do come to the monastery in some ways. And actually, I was talking, we have a monk who's from France who's teaching here for the semester. And I was talking to him, and he said that his monastery actually has been seeing a resurgence of Catholic families coming to move to the area to just even live around the monastery, which is really cool. So there's desire for that. And there's actually even like other non-Catholic communities that are starting to spring up that live in intentional community together that are following the rule of Benedict. So I actually even read a book. I think the guy's non-denominational. But he saw how Benedict's rule was super helpful in like growing intentional community in Christ. And so he formed this group. I think it's in North Carolina. And there's kind of like this whole neighborhood that they all live together. And they use the rule as a way to like guide their communal living as families. So because of that, there's a desire that people want to search for truth. And it's really clear that like monasticism holds on to the tradition of truth. So since not everyone's coming, it can be our job, as Nate said, to evangelize and go out. So a lot of the ways we've been doing that has been through the podcast, but we saw that between the three of us, and actually even like extending more into our family and to other people, that the influence of Benedict monasticism in our own lives has transformed the way we relate to other people, the way we think, and even the way we, you know, pray and learn and love. So why stick it with just us? And why just leave it to the podcast when there's so many initiatives we could do? So we have a lot planned, a lot of things to grow into, culturally, books, music, entertainment. We have the card game that's out, The Pitch, but we also want to like develop more of that kind of stuff. Programming, both for parishes, seminaries, married couples, you know, tons and tons of different ideas. Incorporating prayer and exercise, you know, like the rule of Benedict and fitness, got that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of ideas going, and we're really excited to get this train out of the station. So I figured real quick, I would just ask each of you guys to share maybe like one or two initiatives that you specifically are thinking about working on in the umbrella of the Benedict Project, Restoring the Culture Through St. Benedict's Model. And then we'll spend some time after that talking about like what exactly has like Benedictine monasticism meant to you, and like in your space, Tom, as you know, a dad with kids, and Nate in your space as like coming into the workforce, and what do you think is valuable for you from monasticism, and why do you think that something that seems to be, you know, applicable only to, you know, celibate men living in community is actually applicable to everyone. First, Nate, what are some initiatives you're working on? We'll go with the initiatives first, and then we'll circle back to that question.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. So first of all, one thing I'm trying to work on, and we're still in kind of the production phase of it because I've had some technical difficulties with camera and microphone and stuff, but currently working through some ideas for making my own videos. Like, you make videos in addition to the ones we have for the podcast. You have your own individual ones. So I'll be working on tackling some of that, basically with a focus on matters relating to theology and how they relate to our daily life. So that's one thing. And another thing is, collectively, as the three of us, we're working on a book right now, specifically on philosophy. And kind of the focus of the book is how to choose your philosophy for life and not have it chosen for you. Because the reality is, you know, whether we realize it or not, every one of us lives by some philosophy. And sometimes it's a little bit scattered. Sometimes we have some conglomeration or hybrid of a few different philosophies. But most of us have some rule for life intellectually that guides our actions and our decisions. So it's really important when we realize that to say, okay, well, let me take stock of what I actually do believe and what I think philosophically. And not only let me take stock of that, but let me take some intentional choices and some intentional approach to deciding what I want to believe and what I want to think about the world, whether it's regarding to metaphysics, ethics, the way we know and encounter reality. Like, all these things have some part to play in our daily life and in our choices. And so we're kind of writing a book, the three of us, about how you can identify your philosophy, but also choose one, and choose a healthy one that's going to be conducive to a good and happy life, and one that's going to lead you ultimately to heaven. So that's, you know, one project that the three of us are working on, but currently in the research phase of that. So.
Awesome. Sweet. Yeah. So that, you know, there's intellectual formation going on too, both in your videos and then in our writing. So awesome. Tom, what about you? Some ideas you've had or you're stepping into?
Yeah. One that I'm pretty excited to try to work on, maybe specifically even with my wife too, Johanna, a little bit. And we discussed this, at least the three of us, a little bit, I think a couple weeks ago, is the idea of like a children's book. So I think that'd be pretty cool to, you know, a lot of the content, all this other stuff is pretty lofty. And while I'd still say it's pretty digestible for the common person, I think there's something unique about teaching our kids, even when they're very little, about ideas like monasticism and asceticism. And I think it'd be pretty cool to, you know, collaborate with you guys and with Johanna too, because she's got a good knack for kind of, you know, those sorts of products and, you know, the things that look good and the things that are meaningful, the things that are easy to read with your kiddos, but also like something that can kind of, you can walk away and a parent can enjoy too, is the idea of like developing like a children's book that sort of, kind of introduces like the way of St. Benedict, you know, the rule of St. Benedict to children. Because it could be simple, you know, it's not something that's terribly complicated, but it's still something that can be very beautiful. And certainly Nate here and Johanna are very accomplished, you know, artists. I think there's a lot of talent here to kind of build things that could, picture books, children's books that could look very beautiful. In terms of like writing and stuff, yeah, we're working on that book together, and I think I'm excited to try to, kind of step into a little bit more of a writing role for a number of things and helping us build, whether it's like Brother Francisco, you mentioned like the programming and stuff like that for parishes. Like a lot of my day job stuff comes down to building, documents and user guides and things that are meant to be intuitive and kind of easy to read and easy to digest and sort of fun ways to consume information. So I'm hoping to, collaborate, I think, with you on some of those products as well. But yeah, lots in store. I know we still got a lot of ideas are on the whiteboard, and we got to figure out which ones to tackle first, I think.
Yeah,
But
yep. Yeah, create priority lists, but and legitimate, feasible time frames too, 'cause I think right one thing right now is like I was starting to come up with like a Word document with like almost like a meeting document, whatever, for when we have a planning session. It's like there is just so much I want to do and that we can do. But it's like we need to tackle it one at a time. Yeah, I think for me, you mentioned the parish program. It's called Formed and Fashioned. I have pretty much the first like group of it, or the first segment of it, which is an 11-week program, ready to go, at least in the first stage. It's all planned out, it's all typed up. And so, making it look nice and proofreading and editing is something we need to go through that. But basically, it's going to be part of a three-part parish program bent for a small group parish model. Where we one is led to walk through how to first know themselves, how to accept themselves, and then how to give themselves to others. Looking at through the model of the Clifton Strength Finders as kind of like the background, but exploring so many things like prayer, vocation, how to interact with other people in relationships like romantic, sibling, family, parents, how to forgive and receive forgiveness, what it means to hear God call you through your strengths, but also to recognize that He's also allowed you to have things that you're not good at. So lots of different things. We've run these programs in a way in the college, and they've been extraordinarily successful. And I really wanted to beef them up and give them out to parishes as an opportunity for parish regrowth, evangelization, everything like that. So I'm super excited. That's one thing I'm really excited about. And the second is initiatives of I'm gonna do them as video series, but then also probably turn them into some kind of books too, which is like monasticism or Saint Benedict and blank, or how Saint Benedict can help blank. So how Saint Benedict can help your marriage, how Saint Benedict can help your dating life, how Saint Benedict can help your priesthood for diocesan priests. Then I also want to look at Saint Benedict and the feminine genius, and Saint Benedict and the masculine heart. And looking at how, as God has created us with certain identities and certain personalities as men and women, how Benedict is not just because, he's a man. It's not just monasticism isn't just for men. That there's, and I mean, some of the greatest saints are Benedictine women. So how they take this model of spirituality and monasticism and then blend it well with whether it's the female or the male personality and characteristics. So really excited about those. Also currently working on a series of monasticism and the seven deadly sins, how Saint Benedict and early church desert fathers help us to understand and to battle vice. So yeah, I see monasticism as super super applicable, but I'm also a monk, so like I seem to have a bias. So I was wondering, what you guys think. How have you maybe experienced monasticism in your own life? Whether I mean, it could be directly through me, or I'm not trying to like sound like the egotistical person here. It's like, because of me, you guys have a change in your life. But why would you say that monasticism is important to your experience in life, your relationship with God? And if someone asks, like, well, what does it have to offer me? What would you say? and your own relationship with God, and any of that. Whatever you discern from that question, feel free to answer. Well, Tom, why don't you start this time?
Yeah. So, and I will say I kind of suffer from this thing where I tend to just take things in kind of like one little bite at a time. Bite-size-itis. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. I'm not as good maybe as you two as sort of digesting, say, like a philosophy in bulk and en masse, and, you know, reading the, you know, the Summa or something like that. I tend to just sort of like pick up a little pebble one at a time, and that kind of like eventually I have a little fistful of rocks or something like that. But I think Brother Francisco, yeah, I would say for starters that probably wouldn't necessarily have encountered Benedictine monasticism or Benedictine philosophy, or even necessarily dove that much into St. Benedict as a saint, mm-hmm. had you not become a Benedictine monk. So that's certainly the first kind of like domino in the, you know, in the domino train that probably got our family in general, you know, interested in learning and trying to understand what this means for us, you know. And I would even say maybe to a certain extent, some of the things that I think I've found attractive over time have been just things that are consistent with monasticism. Mm-hmm. You know, just the idea of like asceticism, discipline, prayer, you know, liturgy of the hours being a key part of, you know, the living out of your vocation, and how that's something that's totally, you know, lay people can do that. There's nothing said that says we can't, you know, do liturgy of the hours with the regimented way that you go about it, you know. And, you know, the kind of the recognition of the beauty that comes with chant, recognition of the beauty that comes with, you know, again, that a lot of the things that are part of your daily life as a monk. And, you know, whether it's retreats or even going back to when you were still in college, you know, and I would come visit when you're in college, and we would hang out with the monks, and just seeing these men that were very much in love with God and mm-hmm. and have a source of community that's very powerful. And they're not, you know, they're not kind of, you know, the Benedictine order doesn't navel gaze, you know, it's not seemingly caught up kind of just in a community focused mindset of like, there's the rest of the world and there's us, mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not even necessarily saying that there are orders that sort of like do that to a derogatory extent. But there, it's very evident, certainly at St. Vincent's in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, that, the Benedictine monks, they're a very part of the community. I think that's an important thing as well. So yeah, I think the learning more about asceticism, learning more about kind of the discipline routines that come with being a monk, have been pretty cool. And, you know, it's so awesome to watch the hospitality of, mm-hmm. you know, you and your brother monks. And I could see it from, you know, I think the first men's retreat I went on, one of my like holy moly moments of just seeing like real life sacrifice was brothers Cashin and brother Barnabas cook like 75 delicious cheeseburgers for these young men mm-hmm. on this retreat, and they didn't get a single one because mm-hmm. those hungry dudes ate all of them before they even got one.
Yep.
And that was like heartbreaking, but you know what was not heartbreaking, was just straight up inspiring, was like seeing how still joyful those two were. And you're just like, wow, that's like, you know, there's people who would give the shirt off their back, and there's people who just like literally do that, and they just did that, and they're like, that's it, yeah, there's my shirt, you're good, dude. Mm-hmm. So, you know, seeing like, it's funny because I bet you they'd be like, oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. But like that one thing was like, holy moly, these guys are legit. Like, you know, most dudes would be like having a fit, you know, and they're like, oh, it's good. You know, I just slaved for 2.5 hours making the most tasty bacon cheeseburgers of all time. And it's okay. I'm good. You know, like, so, but anyway, that was kind of, as always, Tom's bite-sized splashboard edition, but there's a lot there. There's a lot.
I was just wondering, you mentioned asceticism, but I was curious if there was an act of asceticism that you like particularly have taken Because, I mean, there's so many different things. Fasting, more discipline in prayer, in the type of prayer, cutting yourself off maybe from certain things in the world, you know, more meditation, Lectio Divina, lots of different things. And I think a lot of people always like associate asceticism with like something that's obviously like painful to the body, and I don't think that's necessarily correct. I think it often is, but that asceticism is also taking on a practice that just makes us uncomfortable. Yeah. And often that's like the most thing that makes us uncomfortable is just like something that we feel painful in our body, whether it's hunger, you know, attachments from other things that we have to cut off. But there's lots of different ways to be ascetical. So I was just wondering if you could like concretize, that's not a word, but make concrete that. What do you mean? Is there an asceticism practice that you've maybe taken it up more, or you want to, even if you haven't, yes, you want to.
By the way, concretize is a word, Sam.
It is? Okay, great. Yeah. Yep. Let's go.
Yeah. But yeah, no, in a nutshell, and this is, again, I'm not sure, you know, you could say, oh, this is an exclusive, like a Benedictine thing to like to take that seriously, or if it's a bit of a Brother Francisco thing, which is a distinct possibility.
That's but, sure. Yeah, I'm okay with conflating the two.
You know, I think this last year, I really worked hard to develop a couple practices in my life. And I can't say that they always are just like just do them all the time. But, you know, sure, things, everything from the cold showers or getting up in the, you know, at like 1 or 2 a.m. just for an hour of prayer, even just like in my home, I'm not necessarily going somewhere, but, you know, just getting up at like 1 or 2 and then making a holy hour in the wee hours of the night, more fasting. And these are things that like, you know, and I wouldn't say that like it was a foreign idea for me to like fast, say outside of Lent, but to say that I ever actually really did it growing up would kind of be not really truthful. Like I never intentionally fasted or put myself in some position of like making myself uncomfortable for the purpose of spiritual growth. But I think this last year, you know, I just started doing things like that. And I would credit at least a good bit of that with seeing you, Brother Francisco, kind of take on some of those things. And I had the benefit of at least a 40-day period, St. Michael's Lent, with a handful of gents. And so I kind of had that sense of camaraderie. So that really helped as well. But yeah, I think I was partially inspired to even really kind of do any of that stuff, you know, because of some of the things that you've done. And I know some of that's even goes back to like some of the Exodus 90 things. You know, Exodus 90 is a pretty legit program. Again, not exclusively Benedictine, but it's something that kind of calls us to that. I think there's a very monastic aspects to, you know, Exodus 90 and St. Michael's Lent, those sorts of things. So.
Oh yeah, there definitely is. And I think they've honestly improved a lot on the Exodus 90 model, because like I think when I did it, honestly, like looking back, I think they left a lot to be desired, but I think they've improved some of the spirituality, which is why Father Boniface, a Benedictine, is the spiritual director of Exodus 90. I think they realized that like they have to like really make it rooted in something more than just can you white knuckle something for 90 days. But it's funny that you mentioned cold showers and waking up in the middle of the night to pray, because those are two things that I like cannot stand. So I'm happy, but I don't think it's off of me necessarily. So that's good. That's good. That means it's not about me. And those are really good practices. I mean, Saint Therese of Lisieux would say that our guardian angel, like when we wake up in the middle of the night, we often think it's because like we woke up, right? But she said it's often because your guardian angel kept on tapping you to get you to pray about something, which is pretty metal when you think about it that way. But yeah, you're right. Intentional fasting, like really meaning to, is not something a lot of people do. Or if they do, they do like, I don't know, this is going to sound maybe judgmental, but they do something like really easy. Or like they qualify like, okay, well, I'll fast from social media from 1 to 2 p.m. on Fridays. Like, great, great. That's congratulations. Now, some people need to like work up to that, which, you know, that's the whole part about asceticism. It's like slowly entering into and slowly entering into like a period where you can do it for longer. But it might be, you know, it also might just be like a cop out sometimes for people. So anyways, it was one important thing, and then we'll get to Nate, that you mentioned, Tom, is like doing it with other people. Like asceticism, like done exclusively solitary, is like not healthy. That's not good. You need the support of your community. That's why Benedict founded monasticism in the context of a community of people. So, and that a monk actually cannot take up an ascetical practice without the approval of the abbot, because it might be he thinks like, this is really good for me, like I can handle this, and the abbot like, no, that's like honestly the exact opposite of what you should be doing. So okay, to you, Nate, what are some things that like monasticism has maybe moved in your life, or how you see like taking it out to other people is really good?
Yeah, well, first of all, I wanted to touch on what you're saying towards the end about fasting, how people like make really easy fast for themselves. I think it's, well, that's fair. I think sometimes people, we might be tempted to do that, like start with a very, very small goal, so small it's hardly even a sacrifice. But I think what also we sometimes do is set out a goal that on paper sounds like a real sacrifice, but then it's not actually targeted at something that we have as an actual attachment. For example, there are some people that just genuinely don't like sweets, but when it comes to be Lent time, or like, not that they don't like sweets, because most people have some amount of sweet tooth, especially if they're from America, but maybe they really don't have that much attachment to sweets, or they don't use sweets as a coping mechanism. But then Lent rolls around and they say, well, it's Lent, I'm going to give up sweets. Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, well, that's not really targeting one of your idols. Whereas in Lent, what we should really do is rid ourselves of our idols and our pharaohs, and, you know, basically separate ourselves from all of our attachments, the things that really have a hold on us. So
yeah.
Things like, for example, cold showers. That's why I think it's really good that Exodus 90, since we brought that up, targets a lot of different attachments, is because no matter who you are, some of the things in there are probably going to appeal to you. And so by cutting yourself off from some of those earthly pleasures, you can really, rather than just like taking one easy thing that isn't really even that much of a struggle for you, you can pick the things that really do have an attachment. And anyway, I know it's a little bit of a tangent, but I just wanted to bring that up.
That's good. That's good.
And I think like that's partly what's really cool about monasticism, from what I can tell, is that, you know, it's an ongoing conversion. And part of that, well, you guys value the term conversatio, right? Which is in your Benedictine understanding, that's this ongoing conversion, a lifelong conversion.
Right.
And a big part of that, from what I understand, is an increasing awareness of self and this ongoing process of self-knowledge, where you come to deeper understanding of your own attachments, the ones that might not be leading you closer to God, and you come to a deeper understanding of your own weaknesses. But then through prayer and through increasing intimacy with our Lord, you know, by His grace, you're able to overcome those. And I think I really value that, and that the fact that that's a Benedictine value, if you will, because, well, it's very down to earth and it's very relatable. Like the fact of the matter is, you know, we read about certain saints like St. Paul, who was on the road to Damascus. He was one way, he was doing a terrible thing, and then boom, the Lord speaks to him and suddenly his life is completely different. And he's radically on fire for our Lord. Or other saints like that, right? There are other saints who seem to have this 0-60 or like 180 degree turn, radical transformation in their lives. But the reality is, for most of us, that's not how it is. Most of us don't have a road to Damascus moment. Mm-hmm. We have what we should aim to have, and we should be humble enough to accept, is this ongoing conversion. So I think the fact that St. Benedict emphasizes that with conversatio is really good, because it's a good model for Christian life. It's one that's more doable, one that's more sustainable, and I think in the end, one that's often much more profitable. Because, you know, the reality is, if you try to approach spirituality as something that can be just affixed overnight, or you look at your own vices and you think, well, I should just become virtuous by tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
You're not going to be able to sustain that. You're not going to be able to achieve that. But then, and then in the process, you're going to give up and you become frustrated. And then you might end up in a state of despair. But instead, approaching it more this kind of humble monastic way, which I think it, the idea of conversatio goes hand in hand with Benedict's emphasis on humility. That whole dynamic of recognizing your own weakness, even in trying to become holy, and the fact that it's going to be a long process, is really good. It's good for us. It's good for our humility. It's good for ultimately our hope because it guards us against those temptations to despair that inevitably happen when we realize we can't do it alone. Mm-hmm. We can't do it instantaneously.
Yeah.
It is a long, ongoing process. So I think I just love that because, I'm sorry, I keep going on about this, but no, like,
I
think it's just the idea of conversatio, from what I understand, it is kind of, it embodies the Catholic understanding of conversion, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the big differences between Catholics and many Protestant denominations is we don't believe you can just have a singular moment and then you're good from there on out. We know that it is a continual process of healing, and it will last your entire life. It's not like, oh, it might last your entire mm-hmm. life, it might not. Like, no, it's guaranteed. As long as your heart is beating and you're on earth, you need to be in a continual process of conversion. And so I just love that St. Benedict recognizes that. And so that's, I think, one of the most powerful elements of spirituality, and the one that I want to take for my own life and my own approach to spirituality, and the one that I want to share with other people. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Nate. Yeah, no, like I just tell people that the vow of conversatio is just really taking our baptismal promises to another level. It's like, and being really intentional and serious about them. And that it just really rests on the principle that all we have is today. Like, I can't be holy tomorrow. Like, I can't be holy tomorrow. I don't, like, or plan to be holy tomorrow. Yeah, C.S. Lewis says, the present is where eternity touches reality, and no other point. So if I'm going to imagine that, oh, I'll be holy later, or I'll do these things later, like, who knows? That might happen, it might not. But you can decide what to do today. But taking those active steps of, okay, I was one way yesterday. I can't change 10 things today, but I can change one. I can try, I can start even. I can even just, that sometimes is conversatio, is beginning to start to have the desire to do something, right? It's that slow thing. And I liked something you said that, like, you know, some people have that crazy conversion, but a lot of us don't. And I was reading recently, an image that I really appreciated just said, like, when we have those moments where we recognize that, like, we desire heaven, we might get frustrated why we don't just immediately start running towards it. But he said, a lot of people don't just, even when they know they need heaven, don't start running, because some of us have to just start by slowly walking backwards away from hell. And if we've, like, finally, the conversatio was like taking one step backwards, like slowly and slowly and slowly, till we hit a point where we can turn around and start moving forward. And that's the steps of humility, I think, too. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of good there.
100%. Just one thing I wanted to say. I think it's really good as a Catholic to recognize that this is not about just being easy on yourself, because especially if you feel kind of hardcore and you're in one of those moments of inspiration where you're like, no, I want a full saint, I want to be a great saint. If you hear these kind of messages, like, take it slow, be humble, be patient with yourself, it might come off as just being easy on yourself, like almost like a Catholic form of self-therapy. Like, yeah, you know, it's okay that you have these vices, just it takes time. But it's really not about being therapeutic, and it's not about going easy on yourself. It's actually the opposite. It's about recognizing, okay, do you want to just feel like you're doing something really good this week or today, or do you in the long haul want to get to heaven? Because the fact of the matter is, if you sometimes don't take that that little pill of humility, if you don't kind of swallow your own pride and acknowledge that conversion is this ongoing process, then you're going to get burnt out. And getting burnt out, we're not talking emotionally, I'm talking spiritually, you're going to get burnt out and you might give up. And you could fall into, again, discouragement or despair. When you're there, then that's really the lowest point. That's where you're most susceptible to the devil's temptations. So it's really about, like, this idea of humility with conversion is really about having a sustainable plan, a plan that can ultimately lead you to heaven, not one that's going to get you part of the way there and then ultimately lead to hell. Because, like, I always think of the analogy with fitness, right? Like, there's a lot of people. Who are already well past it, they say, I think the second Friday of January is where most people have already given up on their gym resolutions. So they plan January 1st, I'm going to get after it, I'm going to get super jacked. They have these insane goals. They're like, in a couple weeks, I'm going to get so jacked, I'm going to lose 100 pounds, or I'm going to gain 100 pounds of muscle, whatever. And then 2 or 3 weeks in, they realize, oh, this is going to take some work, and they give up. And where are they by the end of the year, by December 31st? They're not only are they not any better, they might be worse off than they were at the start of the year. And so with the gym, you know, having that humility to be like, it's going to be a process, actually will get you the best gains. Same with spiritual life.
But. Yeah, dude. And so hopefully then this Benedict project can be something that gives you a little bit of a boost in those gains. We can't do the work for you. We can't do the work for people. And as Father Boniface said recently, content is not the substitute for conversion. So we can feed you stuff, but that doesn't matter at the end of the day if you have not encountered a relationship with Jesus. But hopefully we can begin to create some kind of environment or situation or give to you tools by which then you take up, as Benedict would say, the tools for good works, the things that we need to do in order to foster that relationship with Christ and others. So that's the Benedict Project. That's the goal. So All Good in the Brotherhood will be coming every week still, just under this new umbrella and this new initiative. So yeah, we're excited for you all to journey with us. If you have questions, you have ideas, please check us out on YouTube, obviously. Leave a comment below. Or you can follow us all on Instagram individually, or you can follow the podcast, and eventually we'll have the Benedict Project as its own thing. You can follow that on Instagram as well. You can send us an email if you have questions or ideas. And yeah, let's build this community in a different way, but that's still very monastic. So yeah.
Just one thing I wanted to say about the idea of building it as a community. The more fan participation we have, the better, right? We don't want this to be a show. Even the term fans, I've just said the term fan, but I don't even like that term. It's not about that. It's about we want to have a community. And so part of that means in comment sections in the comment sections for posts or videos, wherever, please leave questions. If you have questions about monasticism, or if you have comments with one another, even if you're interacting with other viewers, or asking for prayer requests, if you're struggling with something right now, or, you have a loved one who might need some prayers, go ahead and drop some prayer requests so we can look at it. We can offer some prayers for you and your loved ones, or, other viewers can help out. We want to build more of a community, kind of like, even though it's virtual and we're doing this through social media, we don't want it to feel like just another bit of content on social media. We want it to feel more like an opportunity for some communion with our fellow Christians. So
awesome. Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it. Yeah. Tom, do you have any words to add? I don't know if you're having some tech difficulties, but
yeah, nothing to close us out with other than I think, yeah, just like Nate said, this isn't about sort of generating more fans. We've all decided that something that started out as kind of like a bit of a hobby, if you will, or maybe a little bit of a just kind of a fun pursuit as brothers, is now something that we all want to make as part of our individual ministries, our ways to contribute to this new evangelization. So yeah, as Nate said, it's not about this idea of kind of like fans. It's just we want to leverage what we can do, what our skills are, our talents are, what our passions are, to try to promote these very important ideals in a society that's hurting a lot and has need of the values and the virtues that are offered by Benedictine philosophy and Benedictine monasticism. I mean, maybe it's not for you. Maybe you prefer Franciscan, maybe you prefer Dominican, and that's okay. We're not here to say one is better than the other. Well, maybe Francisco is, and that's okay.
There's a religious culture war.
What we can say is there's definitely debating, one.
Go ahead, Tom.
What we can say is there's definitely one order that looks like a bunch of Sith Padawans, and it's definitely the Benedictines.
That's freaking dope.
But there is another order whose main theologian was labeled as the universal and ordinary doctor of the Catholic Church, and that's the Thomists.
Another one whose founder is called the patron of Europe and of Western civilization. So,
cute. Okay.
No Benedict, no Thomas Aquinas.
All right. No, that's a good point. That is a good point. But, well, yeah. All right, we can leave it there.
Anyways. I really want to have on my show, I did not mean to say that. On our show, I want to have a Franciscan and a Dominican on and just like
duke it out.
Yeah, see
be like, I came first. Yeah, yeah, I was here first. Yeah. Yeah, well, then it'll just be like little kids playing on the playground. But, yeah. Well, but it's not just about first, right? It's about also final cause. One theologian said that he speculated that Thomas Aquinas is the final cause of the Dominican order. And for those of you who don't know, you know, the Aristotelian term, final cause or whatever, it just means, you know, kind of the purpose, the thing that the end towards which all other parts are ordered. And so, yeah, Aquinas is the
maybe they've been irrelevant then for 700 years then,
according to that. No, they were very relevant. They needed the setup for his arrival. So anyway, and then the Benedictines set up for the arrival of the Dominicans. So you guys were the first. You did your job. You got things started.
Yeah, have you heard the joke that if Benedictines had done their job, Dominicans wouldn't exist? But to be more blamed are the Dominicans, who, if they had done their job, the Jesuits wouldn't exist.
See, that's rough. That's rough.
You know, actually, we should have a Jesuit on too, and then everyone would just team up.
It's like a roast sesh.
Yeah. Which, like, apologize if, like, you have, like, Jesuit friends or went to a Jesuit school or something, but, like, yeah. But, sorry.
There are good ones out there. Well, people always say they're good ones, and then they mention, like, the two ones everyone knows, like, Father Mitch Pacwa, Father Spitzer. There's a few others, but, like, they're ballers for sure. They're not going to the stake, but, like, but there's plenty out there who are a little more sus. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Anyway, so we don't detract from everything.
But we love all Catholics.
Some are just more equal than others.
We just pray harder for some.
Yeah. Yeah. In our comment section, please leave prayer requests specifically for any Jesuit priests you might know.
That's insane.
We're just throwing insane shade right now.
Please pray for us, because obviously we all need it too. Thank you for joining us. We're going to sign off here. I'm Brother Francisco. I'm joined with Nate, Tom. We are the brothers of the All Good in the Brotherhood podcast, part of the Benedict Project. Thank you for joining us. I hope you all have a wonderful day. God bless.
Peace.
God bless.
Get lit.